Ladies and gentlemen, the wait is finally over. Welcome back to episode 21 of Hollywood Week, the podcast. My name is Keenan Culler, and I am joined once again by the heart of Chicago, the almost doctor, and the guy who puts the number two in season two. It's Kaysen Culler. Kaysen, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good, Keenan. Was that kind of an insult, or was that supposed to be a nice gesture? I'm not sure, but either way, it feels good to be back. The weather is hot. I was sweating like crazy this weekend, but now I'm in my nice air-conditioned apartment ready to talk about movies.
Kaysen, I like that nothing has changed since season one. You're still coming in with the weather report.
Dude, that's my signature intro now.
Kaysen, I think I could come in and say that there was a zombie apocalypse and Dave Bautista is trying to save us all, and you would still say, that's great, Keenan.
I would say, man, but how about that flurry we got yesterday? That was a little crazy, man.
Zombies are rough, but temps are in the mid-60s, light breeze.
Oh, man. I mean, well, I don't know what else to update you on in Chicago. I feel like I don't want to talk about, you know, all the other stuff going on here.
Kaysen, that's probably a good idea. Kaysen, I love it. This is, as you know, the season two premiere. This has been long delayed, long talked about, long promised, and it's finally here.
It's finally here. People have been waiting with bated breath.
Yeah, I've had seven people in the last 6 months ask me about this, and I hope all seven of you are listening. This is it. We've arrived.
Yes, we're here.
Especially Matthew Chang.
He's been our number one fan.
Our number one fan, our most vocal supporter. but yeah, Kaysen, this is exciting. Where's your hype level for season two? Now, we recorded our finale of season one, episode 20, way back in March of 2020, over a year ago, Kaysen.
That is crazy. I mean, I guess we did a little bit of pandemic stuff in the middle there, but it's been a long time. Well, it's especially just been a long time since we've really gotten any momentum here with the movie industry in general. So it's gonna be a roller coaster. I'm excited.
Yeah, this feels like a good time to come back. I feel like things are on the up and up. I think that the Hollywood is reviving itself, and yeah, I think we're kind of
the world is reviving itself.
yeah fingers crossed. So I think we're coming back at the right time. Thank you to everyone for being patient. Thank you for checking out all of the other wild stuff that we did during the break. But for the uninitiated, this is kind of a weekly recap show where we talk about all the news, all the trailers that dropped, new movies we checked out, stuff that's upcoming, dive into the mailbag, answer those questions. This is a fun time. I feel like this is a little more comfortable for us and kind of where I feel like the most at home with the show.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I think the ranking episodes are always a good time just because we love to, comment on the quality of things that we care about. But I think that, this is just more fun because each week is kind of a surprise and we don't know what we're going to hear about. We don't know when things are going to dramatically defy our expectations for them. So, you know, it's always interesting.
We don't know what's going on. Now, Kaysen, you did mention that COVID is on the decline. Now, as the almost doctor, how much credit do you take for shutting down COVID?
Yeah, personally, I mean, I've been doing a lot of work. You know, I've been trying to really put in the research, put in the vaccine development, and I think that we did a good job. So, no, I'm kidding. Of course, I cannot take any credit, but
obviously,
I am very happy.
Yes.
Yeah. Just to clarify, you never know, Keenan. I don't want to get canceled over here, but I think that it's awesome. It's awesome how quickly we've been able to get these vaccines out here, and I'm so excited that yeah, we're just finally opening up again.
Kaysen, we're back. The movie theaters are back. Everything's good. I knew this show needed to come back because I kind of hit a low point, Kaysen.
Oh, no.
I missed the show so much. I just started doing it by myself, just with no mic, pretty much just talking to the wall. Now, when you're sitting in a dark room reviewing Scoob! ! To yourself on a Wednesday night, you know you've hit rock.
To your four-year-old daughter.
You've hit rock bottom.
Yeah. Exactly.
Now we're back. Kaysen, without further ado, let's remind him one more time. This is Hollywood Week, the podcast. We can now say we drop this episode or these episodes each and every Tuesday for your listening pleasure. We got the social media game before we get into the show. Let's mention that because you can follow us on Instagram. That's at Hollywood_week. I've kind of turned the Instagram page into like a news feed. So if you want to know what's going on, follow us on Instagram. We got a lot of good stuff over there. But Kaysen, nothing has changed since season one. We still got the bread and we still got the butter. That's the Facebook group. Why don't you tell the audience about the Facebook group?
That's right, Keenan. The Facebook group, truly the crown jewel of the Hollywood Week podcast. You got to get over there. Go to Hollywood Week, the podcast on Facebook. We have a great community, people giving their opinions about stuff they've recently seen, people asking just kind of fun questions about, you know, what ifs, hypotheticals, things like that. It's really great. And I think if you're just looking for a place to either stay up to date with the news about our podcast or the movie industry, or just kind of get into some good conversations about movies and TV shows, then that is the place for you.
Kaysen, I look at the Instagram page as kind of like the Ant-Man and the Wasp of our social media game.
Ooh,
and then
okay.
I look at the Facebook group as like the Irishman of our social media game.
I thought you were going to do another Marvel movie, but yeah, that's fair.
Well, no, I mean, one of those is Marvel and the other one's cinema. So you know what I'm saying?
That's true. Keenan, I hope it makes you happy to know that I'm currently wearing my T-shirt that has a picture of Martin Scorsese saying that's not cinema on it.
Perfect.
That you gave me for winning our... trivia challenge, I believe, in season one.
Yeah, the season one finale, Kaysen. You won the trivia challenge, you won the Martin Scorsese t-shirt, and you're now wearing it for season two.
Full circle.
Exciting. Now, Kaysen, I'm so glad I get to ask questions like this again. What is the number one reason that you would want to follow us on social media, just in case you didn't learn in 20 episodes in season one?
Number one reason is for news updates, Keenan.
No.
Is that right? Oh, shoot.
What? Kaysen, you should have read the note. You should have read the clip
Dang
notes.
It. What did I...
Oh, my god!
What have
gosh.
I been doing for the past year?
Kaysen, I can't believe you forgot one of your only lines or your only scripted lines of the show.
Kaysen, hey, man, I'm over here killing it week after... I mean, what do you want me to do?
That's what happens when you get vaccinated three times. You start getting fuzzy on the
details.
Yeah,
I'm getting that memory loss.
Kaysen, the number one reason you want to follow us on social media is so you can submit questions for the show.
Oh my gosh, I guess that's true.
Just like our boy, Matthew Chang, fresh off recent suspension, he's back. He wants to know, hey guys, I would love to hear you comment on how bad the Oscars were this year and where Nomadland ranks on the list of best picture winners and why it's in last place.
Keenan, that seems like kind of a leading question. I don't know how you feel
about
it.
Yeah, it sounds like Chang is not too happy with Nomadland, not too happy with the Oscars. Kaysen, I got to be honest with you. This is the first year in, honestly, since I've been conscious, that I didn't watch the Oscars.
Yeah, man, me either. I mean, I watched the highlights, I watched some clips, but I did not watch the show live either.
And the sad thing is, I liked a lot of the nominees. I actually jumped on an Oscar podcast with our boys from the Cinema Drip podcast. So we talked about it. It's just Oscar night rolled around. For some reason, I just had no interest.
Yeah, it felt very anticlimactic this year. I mean, maybe partially just because the movie theater situation has been so dismal. But also just because, I don't know, the Oscars have really been on kind of a downward trend, I think, recently, and kind of that compounding with the pandemic situation really was not good for their interest level.
Yeah, the ratings were at an all-time low. I mean, some of that is due to just trends kind of going downward. Obviously, like you said, COVID had a huge impact on people's interest in the movies and just the lack of movies. But yeah, it looked like a pretty bad telecast, a pretty bad show in general, just from the clips I saw. As far as Nomadland goes, I know you did not see this, Kaysen. I really did not like this movie at all. I've famously railed against this movie and how much I thought it sucked. I would say from the best picture winners that I can recall, this is definitely towards the bottom.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Which sucks because I was excited to watch Nomadland. Chloe Zhao, who's going to direct the Eternals for Marvel, really excited about what she's going to do. I mean, the film, it looks beautiful. It's just, I don't want to watch Frances McDormand wandering around the desert aimlessly for 2 hours with no momentum, no drive, no purpose. It's just a very hollow, empty movie to me. It should have been called Indie Movie, The Movie.
Yeah, that's kind of what it seems like. I mean, honestly, your review of the movie really sucked out all of my interest in watching this, so I probably will not be seeing it anytime soon. I would like to watch it sometime before The Eternals comes out, just so I have a bit of a reference point for Chloe Zhao. I do think it's interesting just because I don't think a lot of, like, you know, I guess I'll say just regular people who watch this like it that much. It seems like kind of a critical darling. But it's interesting how Chloe Zhao really is kind of a hot commodity right now in Hollywood. And like, just because she won Best Picture, it seems like The Eternals is getting a ton of hype. And I just wonder how you're feeling about that, since, like, does the fact that you feel like this movie is overrated and kind of critically acclaimed, but, you know, panned by audiences, make you a little bit more nervous for Eternals? Or do you think she's going to be able to kind of bridge the gap there in her talents?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think because Nomadland was such a dud for me, I'm a little concerned about Eternals, but not that much. I feel like when it comes to the story, when it comes to the direction that Kevin Feige wants to go in, he ultimately has control over that. So I had no problem with the visuals of Nomadland. Beautiful looking movie. And I hope it looks, just from the trailer, which we're going to talk about later in this episode, it looks like Eternals is going to follow suit and just be a stunning, beautiful look. Probably something that we haven't really seen in Marvel before, with Marvel before. So I'm really excited about that. But yeah, I think we'll just have to see. I'm not as hyped as I was before I saw Nomadland. I will say that.
Sure. Yeah. That makes sense. Unfortunate, but understandable.
Matthew Chang, thanks for the question. First question of season two, and a question that did not lead to another suspension. So very exciting. You're still in the game, Matt.
That's right. Keep it up.
Kaysen, let's dive in, as we always do, to what we've been watching.
Dive in. Let's dive in. Maybe we should talk about Quiet Place 2 first.
Kaysen, normally we break down the week as far as what we've been watching, but tonight we haven't done this in a while, so we're going to kind of encompass the last few months, I would say, of big releases, things we want to talk about. Some things we'll spend a little bit of time on, some things we'll spend a lot more time. It just depends how good we're feeling about the movie.
Oh boy. Let's get into it.
Kaysen, let's get started with something that we both saw last week. I would say probably the biggest movie in the country right now, and maybe the movie that proved once and for all the theaters are back.
Yes.
Let's talk about John Krasinski's follow-up to the hit 2018 film, A Quiet Place. We're talking about A Quiet Place Part 2.
Oh, man, Keenan.
Kaysen, what an experience. You saw this movie in Texas?
I did.
I saw this movie in Indiana. That's completely irrelevant to what we're about to say, but no. Just providing some context on where
from
we were.
From across the country, the theaters were open.
Kaysen, initial thoughts on Krasinski's A Quiet Place Part 2.
Keenan, I thought this was the perfect movie to get people back into the theater. I feel like it delivered completely on what I wanted from it. I thought it was a great sequel to the first movie. I thought that it kept kind of the small scale and focus on the characters that we liked that helps it be a little bit more emotionally, you know, like a worthwhile emotional investment as opposed to blowing up and expanding the scope too much, which I think that a lot of sequels to sci-fi or horror movies are, you know, have a tendency to do. And I just think it's an amazing theatrical experience. Like, the sound design in this movie is amazing. I thought the special effects were awesome. They really stepped it up from the first movie. And just the way that Krasinski directs these scenes, I mean, the tension is so well done. Like, you're just on the edge of your seat for a large portion of the movie. So, I was loving it. What did you think?
Completely agree. Kaysen, you nailed it. This is the perfect movie to get people back in the theaters. Everybody loved the original Quiet Place. This is a movie that demands to be seen in the theater with an audience. And I feel like the fact people showed up, people turned out, it was awesome. I love seeing the success. And I agree. I think Krasinski was smart. He didn't go too big. He didn't go too typical sequel where he just blows it up and makes it this huge, like, overblown thing. He kept the small scale of the original, kept the focus on the characters, the family. And it's like, I was telling you, it felt like every time we would get kind of a big popcorn, I always say Spielbergian because I feel like these scenes of like tension and monsters remind me a lot of like Jurassic Park and some of Spielberg's best stuff. But every time we would get a scene like that, he would always counter it with these beautiful, quiet, no pun intended, quiet moments with the characters where we would get, you know, long conversations, like really dive into their emotional side. And just, it didn't just feel like mindless entertainment similar to the first one. You cared about the people getting chased by these monsters. monsters, and that's what makes it effective.
Yep, 100%. I also think he did a great job with developing the characters. Specifically, I really liked how he used the kids in this movie. I feel like going directly from the first movie, you can see how in the first movie, the kids were a little bit more of like a plot device as far as people who needed protecting, you know what I mean? And then in this movie, I thought it was cool how he really pushed them forward into being a little bit more capable and sort of, you know, stepping up on their own. I mean, spoiler alert for the first Quiet Place, now that Krasinski's character is gone, you know, and like being a little bit more proactive about protecting Emily Blunt and the baby. And I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, the daughter, I mean, we got to give major props to the daughter in this movie. She really was like the star of the movie, I would say.
Yeah.
Her and Cillian Murphy, who a lot of people would know from like 28 Days Later, Sunshine, the show Peaky Blinders, he is awesome in this movie. Him and the daughter kind of form, like join up and almost have like a Last of Us vibe, like a Joel and Ellie vibe, where they're kind of roaming this post-apocalyptic world together. I even commented to you, like, man, HBO should just follow this exact formula when they make the Last of Us show, because this is great. Like the combination of legit scares with the emotion.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and it's kind of interesting because even some of the plot elements of this movie, I feel like are very similar to things that happen in The Last of Us Part 2, particularly at the end of the game. And so it is really interesting. Yeah, I don't know.
Kaysen, I do want to mention one thing I was telling you. It's, to me, it was kind of interesting because I loved Cillian Murphy's character as kind of this like guy in the town that they knew from back in the day. And now he's kind of this roaming kind of, you know, solo guy who's just trying to survive. But it's almost like his character played the exact same role as John Krasinski. So it was almost like I understand like that he is a different character. He has his own like past that we're going to hopefully find out about more in the third movie. But it's almost like they kind of went back to the well as far as like, here's just the lead guy who kind of is the protector and like does the stuff to help, you know? And
almost,
I know Emily Blunt just had a baby in the previous movie, but it's almost like maybe she could have been a little more active in the movie and kind of been a little bit more in the hero role. And Cillian Murphy didn't even need to be there. That's my only complaint. And it's not even really a complaint. It's more just like a what if type scenario if they went a different direction.
Yeah, totally. It was an interesting decision for sure. I think a lot of the payoff will be dependent on the third movie and kind of how they use his character. Right now, I think it's still sort of, you know, up for grabs as far as whether or not, you know, that'll be a satisfying decision or not.
Yeah, and that's the last thing we'll say. This movie is definitely a part two of three. And I think you got to know that. I wouldn't say you have to know that going in, but it's definitely not a complete movie. We need to see the conclusion of this trilogy to kind of give this movie more context, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. One little anecdote, Keenan, in the theater I saw this at, this couple, like a few rows behind us, actually brought a baby with them to the movie.
What?
And it was hilarious because like the baby was actually really good. Like it didn't cry or anything, but every once in a while it would like, you know, make a little baby noise. And it was very unclear whether like, you know, the baby in the movie was making a noise or it was coming from the theater. So it really created this kind of, you know, 4D experience.
Kaysen, that's what is happening in Texas?
I don't know.
I imagine the mom's holding a baby and the dad just has like a shotgun across his lap.
Just they literally are the characters from the movie.
Incredible. Kaysen, that's A Quiet Place Part 2. Hey, real quick, I forgot. Our girl Veronica Bullard wrote in, just like you can. She said, first thoughts on A Quiet Place Part 2. Holy shit, that was amazing. Second thoughts, we have to have a third movie because we still don't know where these things come from.
Interesting.
Now, Veronica Bullard, I agree with your first thought, holy shit, but your second thought, we don't know exactly, but I will say, without saying too much, we did get a really cool sequence where they somewhat show us where they came from.
Yeah, I mean, we know they come from the sky.
Whoa, Kaysen, come on, spoilers, dude.
Well, we knew that in the first one, right?
Some people might think they come from the ocean.
Oh, that's fair. Like Godzilla.
Anyway, Quiet Place Part 2, thank you for reviving the theaters. Everyone go see it ASAP. It deserves to be seen in a theater.
Yes. Thank you, Jim Halpert.
Kaysen, moving on to something that you saw that I definitely want to see, haven't had the chance yet. This also came out last week with A Quiet Place Part 2. That is another Disney reimagining, we'll say, Cruella.
Cruella, yes.
Can you sing the Cruella de Vil song to lead us into this brief review?
I can, but I will not.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, Cruella, I just saw it yesterday. I thought it was really, really good. I was going to say definitely better than the other Disney live action villain movies they've made, but I actually have not seen those other movies, so I cannot definitively say that from my own perspective, but based on everything I've heard about them, I think this definitely seems superior.
Kaysen, you're saying this is a better movie than Angelina Jolie standing in front of a green screen moaning and screaming for 3 hours?
Yeah, that's the vibe I get anyway. I don't know.
Hey, Maleficent, I just dogged you.
I really, really like this movie a lot. I would highly recommend it to anyone. I thought it was incredibly fun. This movie is really like a popcorn, just enjoyable movie. It's not something you're going to leave like thinking about. It's not something you're going to be deeply emotionally affected by. It's just great spectacle, great entertaining performances, awesome costume design, awesome visuals, really, really fun sequences, even involving like some animals and stuff. There are some heist elements to part of it. A large portion of the movie is very similar to The Devil Wears Prada, if you're into that sort of like employer-employee vibe. It's really kind of all over the place, but I just found it incredibly entertaining. And I really have to give a ton of credit to Emma Stone and especially Emma Thompson for just carrying the movie. Oh my gosh. Emma Thompson is like a legit scene stealer in every single scene she's in. She is hilarious. She absolutely nails the role of this, you know, kind of old like fashion superstar who just thinks that she is the greatest gift God has ever given the planet. It's awesome. I will say the beginning of the movie is a little bit questionable to where you're starting to think, okay, is this going to be some, you know, kind of goofy, cheesy thing that isn't able to deliver? But then after they get out of the intro sequences, I think it really picks up steam quickly. So,
Kaysen, questions for you on this movie. Now, you compared it to The Devil Wears Prada.
Yeah.
Is this like a more heightened reality, like where... Is Emma Thompson, for example, comparing her to Meryl Streep in Devil Wears Prada, is she more like big and over the top and kind of playing it up? Or does it feel like it could be real? Like, what's the vibe like?
I think it feels like a little bit of a heightened reality, but mostly because of the way that it's filmed, not necessarily because of like actual things that happen. But it's definitely a little goofier. I mean, like, you know, she lives in this giant like manor called like Hellman Castle or whatever, you know, like she has the Dalmatian pets. So, you know, it's a little bit more like Disney-ish, but the way that she actually behaves, like, you know, to her employees and around Emma Stone, I would say is comically similar to Glenn Close, but, Meryl Streep.
How dare you?
Yeah, my bad. But it is a little bit more over the top. Yeah, definitely.
Kaysen, last question on Cruella. Without spoiling anything, obviously, how do they skate around the idea that Cruella, from what we know from the cartoon, wants to kill dogs, skin them, and wear their fur?
Yeah, I don't want to spoil anything. So I don't really want to comment on that too much. But I will say, I think the way that they handled it was done very well.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'll just say, like, they don't really go too heavily into that idea that she wants to murder dogs.
Gotcha.
In the movie. But obviously, they kind of play with it a little bit, because that's what she's known for, obviously.
Probably smart. I mean, I think it'd be incredibly difficult to make someone, like, an anti-hero or any kind of sympathetic character if you, you know, put that in there.
Yeah, yeah. And I will say the movie is a little bit darker than I thought it would be. It goes to some kind of, you know, mature places thematically that I liked. And then I'll also just give a quick shout out. Is that guy's name Paul Walter Hauser?
Yes. Yep.
He is also a scene stealer. He is so funny as one of her two henchmen slash friends. Just exactly how you would expect him to be. Every line is like a laugh out loud moment from him.
Awesome. Kaysen, I will definitely be watching that. That's Cruella. You can watch that in theaters, or if you want to pay $29.99, that is on Disney Plus right now.
Yeah, check it out.
Kaysen, next up, we're going to talk about something that just dropped this weekend. You have not had a chance to watch it yet. I just watched it yesterday. That is The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It.
Oh, man, Keenan. Yeah, this is something I'm very excited to check out. I loved the first two movies, so please tell me, how was this movie?
Kaysen, I feel like that could be the name of this podcast. Hollywood Week, The Devil Made Me Do It.
Yeah. Maybe one episode.
Anyway, Kaysen, this movie was interesting. Now, me and you are both huge fans of the Conjuring franchise. I gotta be honest, I could care less about the spinoffs. Don't care about Annabelle. Don't care about that nun. Definitely don't care about that Mexican Ya Llorona, or whatever that character's called. I just don't care. But when it comes to the James Wan directed The Conjuring and The Conjuring 2, huge, huge fans. Now, one interesting thing, if you go back and listen to our top 10 horror films of all time, I believe you put The Conjuring 2 in your list. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct.
Kaysen, so your hype level is going to be high as hell, and I'm not going to try to bring that down, but I'm going to bring it down a little bit.
Go ahead.
The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It is a good movie. It's a competent movie. This feels better than a run-of-the-mill horror film, but it does not reach the heights of the James Wan directed Conjuring 1 and 2. Now, James Wan did not direct this. This is directed by a guy named Michael Chavez, I believe, from Ya Llorona, however you pronounce that. he's coming over to direct The Conjuring 3. I think he did an adequate job. Again, it just doesn't quite have that level of polish, doesn't quite have that level of care that I feel like a master like James Wan put into the first two movies. This is an interesting story. This is about the first ever court case where a guy claims that due to demonic possession, he murdered someone.
This is based on a true story, right?
Yeah, based on a true story. Again, we get the Ed and Lorraine files, from their real life expeditions and stuff. But yeah, so based on the trailer, based on that premise, I was excited. But one of the things that's kind of disappointing to me, this is not really a courtroom movie, not really something like Exorcism of Emily Rose. This is just a straight up Conjuring type horror film. It is not like at all centered around this guy on trial, anything like that. That's just kind of the framing of the movie. All the scenes play out like we've seen in this universe before. And I feel like that's maybe my biggest problem. It's just kind of like diminishing returns. How many times can we watch the same type of movie before it just starts to get a little stale, you know?
Yeah.
Especially when it's not quite as sharp, quite as good, quite as scary. It all just feels a little bit like redundant. I've seen this before. And overall, I was just kind of left with a pretty good, but nothing too special.
Now, I've heard some people say that they feel like in this movie, it seems as if the director maybe thought that the courtroom idea or the main plot was not substantial enough to carry the entire movie. So it feels like they kind of tried to mix in a lot of other random like subplots or like paranormal elements. Did you kind of feel like that, or did you think there was a good focus on the case?
I did not feel like that. No, I mean, because I heard things like that too, and I thought it was going to be something where they just go on random side missions, like, oh, yeah, Now here's some other demonic doll that has nothing to do with the story, or you know what I mean? Like, here's a tree that's trying to kill people with its branches.
I would like to see that.
No, it was Groot. It was not like that. It was kind of just centered on what happened to this guy, what was the root cause of his possession, how this thing started. And that was all really interesting and kind of ominous. Like, they almost take a more of a real world approach with it, where it's like there is a person, you know, mild spoilers, there is a person who is kind of behind this, but they almost seem so evil and so demonic that you wonder, are they of this world or are they themselves some kind of supernatural entity? You know,
they're kind of
so in touch with like the side of like the demonic, the devil, that it's almost like, what are they? Also, our boy John Noble is in this from Fringe, Mr. Walter Bishop, legend.
Yes.
He is fantastic. Very funny, very creepy when he needs to be, and I really liked his character. Every time he has a few scenes in the movie, and he was great every time he was on screen.
I love it. That's awesome.
Yeah, I guess I would just say there are some standout sequences in this movie. There's a scene in a morgue that is very ominous, very creepy, really like just well filmed and felt the most like Juan, where he kind of leaves the camera lingering, no audio, just lets the audience kind of sit there with these really creepy images for a while before he like does anything with it. But for the most part, a lot of it felt a little too standard scares, you know, like almost like too telegraphed. Here this comes. I know it's coming. There it is.
Gotcha.
Like, for example, you know how like in the first Insidious, for example, there's that scene where that creepy long-haired demon just like walks by that room in the hallway?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. that came out of nowhere. Like, there was no indication, no warning. It was just like, what is this? There's nothing like that in this movie.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's all kind
of... It's not shocking.
Exactly. Now, Vera Farmiga, Patrick Wilson, they were still fantastic as Ed and Lorraine Warren. But again, it's just kind of like... Just felt a little bit like after all these movies, we've just seen it all before.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, that's unfortunate. I guess I was kind of expecting that after hearing the preliminary reviews, but I'll definitely still watch it since it's on HBO Max for free. But sadly, this is one that I don't know if I would pay to go see in the theater.
Cason, our boy Joel Dunham wrote in about The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. He said it was all right. Not the best in the universe, not the worst either. But I still prefer Insidious 1 and 2 to anything in The Conjuring universe.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, I don't even have a problem with that opinion. I like it.
Insidious, like we always say, is more of a roller coaster ride, like a funhouse. And I feel like Conjuring is meant to be taken a little bit more serious. Hey, I will say this, still incredible opening credits. Like, they still use that incredible, like, old, like, 1980s bright yellow font on the screen.
Yeah.
It's almost like it just doesn't fit, though, like, the type of movie that it ends up being, but it still looks awesome.
Gotcha.
So cool. That is The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. You can watch that in theaters or check it out on HBO Max for free.
There you go. Thanks, HBO.
Cason, those are the three big movies I wanted to talk about. Let's just do some rapid fire thoughts on some things that we've seen over the past 3 months. Just get some takes. Cason, you watched, of course you did, Sidork, an animated film on Netflix called The Mitchells versus the Machines. Now, the thing that makes me excited about this movie, this is from the same studio that brought us Into the Spider-Verse and same producer as Lord and Miller. So... what was up with this movie? Fantastic reviews. I just haven't checked it out. But what's up with The Mitchells versus the Machines?
Yeah, I really like this a lot. Really great movie. I would highly recommend it to anyone on Netflix. I mean, this is no Spider-Verse. Come on, that movie is on another level. This is definitely not going to be nearly as memorable as that, but it is a really fun ride. It's another type of thing similar to the Lego movie or Spider-Verse where the jokes are just so rapid fire that, you know, like some of them are going to hit. And so I would say there's a good amount of laughter, you know, per time, which is satisfying. Really good characters. It's kind of a cute plot. And they do the thing that I think these new animated movies have gotten fairly good at, which is they go into the plot in directions that are a little bit further than you might expect. Like, for example, I don't think they play it completely safe in the way that they handle everything. And even little jokes that you don't think might, you know, be a huge deal end up coming back later and being an entire plot element. So I really like that. Really off the wall. Seems like a bunch of people in a writer's room just kind of throwing stuff out and taking whatever they think is funny. Yeah, I liked it. I would recommend it. Also, Cason, awesome animation style. That's the other thing.
One quick question for Mitchells versus the Machines. Is this lean more towards like kids humor or is it a little bit more grown up, like something like Into the Spider-Verse? Where does it fall on the maturity scale?
I think it's a mix of both. I'll say it's a little bit more kid humor than, for example, Into the Spider-Verse, because there are not going to be things like, you know, noir Spider-Man that are like probably going to be really funny to adults.
There's not going to be things like Fisk breaking and murdering Spider-Man's body with his bare fist.
Nothing quite on that level. I would say the humor is maybe more comparable to something like the Lego movie, which is, I would say, you know, more childish, but like, adults are going to think that some things are funny as well. So
nice.
Yeah.
Cool. That's The Mitchells versus the Machines. You can watch that on Netflix right now. Grab the kids. If you don't have kids, grab somebody else's kids and check it out.
Just get some kids.
Kaysen, we're going to talk about another movie on Netflix right now that I checked out. That is the Snyder Cut of Army of the Dead. The only cut.
Oh. The only cut available.
If you didn't get enough of Zack Snyder from his 5.5 hour long Justice League, he's back with zombies, Dave Bautista, and a removed Chris D'Elia from the film due to sexual inappropriateness.
This film's pretty has no scandals behind it at all.
Yeah, this had an interesting road to production. But yeah, this is Army of the Dead on Netflix. Now, I was excited about this because Zack Snyder made his claim to fame with, 2004's Dawn of the Dead, which I remember from back in my Blockbuster days. Love this movie. Love, love, love Dawn of the Dead. If you haven't seen that, check it out. As far as Army of the Dead, it's pretty good. I think I'm going to start calling Zack Snyder Mr. Mixed Bag because this guy is full of highs and he's full of lows. It's just crazy how there are so many sequences where you're just like, man, Snyder is so good. He is so good at like visual style, crafting action sequences, just making things look cool. But then the very next scene is just like, Zack. What are you doing? So overall, this movie was just exactly like Zack Snyder. It's just a mixed bag. And it makes sense because he wrote it, he directed it, he was the director of photography on it. So he pretty much had his hands all over this thing. I thought Bautista in the lead was good. Better than I think Bautista has any right to be. Feel like we know him as Drax from Guardians of the Galaxy, where he's very good as that comedic side character. This was good. I didn't think he seemed kind of wooden, but like almost like intentionally so, not in a bad way, more like he was just kind of stoic, like that was his character, and I liked it. I thought he was good. The problem is, though, so many of these characters are just cardboard cutouts. One of the things, we take so long to get to know the characters, to set up the introductions of who they are, we don't actually get into the Vegas heist, as far as the main crux of this movie, until I check my watch or my phone, until the 50-minute mark of the movie.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, the movie's 2.5 hours long, right?
That's so true, yeah.
You but got it's a like, full movie left after that.
It's weird, because I never felt bored watching it. But I was just like, man, okay, this crew, these mercenaries, they're going into Vegas trying to get this money in the safe with an army of zombies all over the place. And it's like, we don't even get to the mission until the almost 1 hour into the movie. And it's like, that's just too long. You got to trim something, Zach.
Yeah.
I will say opening credits of this movie are unbelievable. Fantastic, fantastic. The opening credits are probably like 6 or 7 minutes long just on their own. They almost tell its own little mini story of kind of what happened with this zombie outbreak. And it was awesome. Like, I was really excited just watching the opening scene, the opening credits. I thought I was in store for something great. It just never really panned out.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Yeah, I might check this out at some point, but it's kind of... your review is kind of what I expected from it, honestly. Now, based on this, do you think that Bautista has the chops to carry, the long-hoped-for Drax spinoff movie?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know. I don't know about that. I think I don't want to see a Drax spinoff movie, but I do think he could be in like the Gears of War movie. I know he's really trying to get that off the ground. So cool. I think he's good. One of the things I really liked about Army of the Dead, they do a great job of setting up the lore of the zombies, where you have different tiers of zombies. So you have like the generals who can actually communicate and actually have somewhat human emotion and are like emotive. Gosh. And then you have like the brain dead, typical kind of just like staggering around dumb. And then you have like the aggressive, like runner type zombies.
This is just giving me like nightmare Game of Thrones flashbacks.
Yeah.
With the White Walkers.
A little bit like that. Biggest takeaway, it just did not deliver on its premise, ultimately. It's a super fun premise. We got these mercenaries going into Vegas to try to crack open the safe, get money out. It should be like Ocean's 11 meets Dawn of the Dead. And the problem is, it just ultimately was flat. Other than a few sequences here and there, it wasn't that fun. It just kind of was, you know?
Yeah.
But Kaysen, our girl Samantha Murphy Ryan writes in, she said with Army of the Dead, she just wanted to know more about the dead. They explore the idea of the zombies getting pregnant, but wouldn't that mean they aren't actually dead? They also mention Area 51 in the movie and the fact that the original King Zombie came from there. Is there a possible alien connection? I just wanted to know more of the scientific stuff, she said.
Wow. Now, this comment makes me want to watch the movie more. Because pregnant zombies? Alien zombies?
Very interesting. Well, Samantha Murphy Ryan, thanks for writing in. But I think if you want the scientific side of things, Zack Snyder is not your guy.
Yeah, I don't think he put that much thought into it, probably.
Anyway, that's Army of the Dead. You can watch that on Netflix right now. Kaysen, let's talk about a couple more things real quick. These are old movies. We don't have to spend too much time on them. Godzilla versus Kong, what did you think? That was actually one of the first big theatrical movies.
That's right. I did not watch this, so I'm going to have to turn it back to you for the comments.
I don't know why I thought you did. No worries. Real quick, I like Godzilla versus Kong. It was smart to keep the focus on King Kong. He was obviously the more sympathetic character. It was completely ridiculous, especially compared to the original Godzilla. And even Kong Skull Island, it was like, man, you got guys flying around in spaceships, going into wormhole vortexes, sucking them into the middle of the earth.
Oh,
the whole
gosh.
Thing was unbelievably over the top, but man, what a fun ride. I had a smile on my face. Great sequences. Again, the human characters were pretty terrible. Everything happening with Millie Bobby whatever Millie Bobby was doing, I wasn't feeling it, Kaysen. I hated it. Rebecca Hall, don't want her in this movie. Overall, the human sucked. Godzilla versus Kong, yes. Give me more of that.
I say bring back Cranston. For Brian.
Well, Kaysen, they made the great decision of killing off the biggest star in the movie, the most sympathetic, charismatic character in the movie, at the 15-minute mark.
Are you talking about Cranston, or you mean in this movie also?
No, I'm talking about Cranston.
Okay, good. I was like, if they did that again, then I would be
Hey, people who want to see Brian Cranston, too bad. You get Aaron Taylor Johnson playing Soldier Number 6.
That's a real bait and switch.
Kaysen, let's talk about Mortal Kombat. What is going on with that? Mortal Kombat!
Hey, I saw this hilarious meme of Scorpion, except it was pandemic version, and he was saying, stay over there.
Okay,
I thought that was pretty funny.
That is actually hilarious.
I know. Anyway, this movie, I thought it was actually pretty entertaining. It was fun. I mean, if I'm judging it objectively, it is not good. Lots of flaws, lots of just stupid things happening. The plot could have been written by a monkey, I think. It might have been, yeah. Who knows? They're trying to save money in some places. But I think that the action was done competently. I think they did enough with the characters and with the fatalities to give you some entertaining moments to latch onto. It was fine. Insanely forgettable, but if you're just looking for something to watch to numb your brain, go for it.
Kaysen, this was a cool movie. I think the opening sequence was so good. Like, the first 15 minutes of the movie, I was like, okay, they are actually trying in this movie. Like, the action sequences look fantastic. The mythology they were setting up, the, like, rivalry they set up. I was really into it. And then I think it unfortunately devolved into a very much like made-for-TV cornball cheese fest, which is fine. That's what we expect from Mortal Kombat. I would just say there were a lot of great moments, a lot of great fan service for fans of the game, but I don't think, other than being violent at times and leaning more into the blood and gore, I don't really know if this was that much better than the 1995 version. Like, it's almost like both of them are good because of how bad they are. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally, totally.
I will say shout out to Kano. He was hilarious and probably stole
really
the movie.
I agree. Him, he was hilarious, and I thought Sub-Zero was at least good, like a fun character to watch.
Yeah, I think the Sub-Zero Scorpion stuff was really cool, and I thought they were smart to kind of make them the focus of the mythology of, like, the movie, you know?
Yes,
but,
definitely.
Like, what's up with Goro? Like, it was kind of weird how Goro is this legendary character. I'm not going to spoil anything, but, like, I just felt like his setup and his moments in the movie were way too brief and just kind of out of left field. This is a guy that you set up to be, if not one of the biggest bads in the universe, like, you at least build him up to where he maybe is in the sequel, gets to fight at the end of the movie. It seemed like they were kind of just pushing him out the door, like, here's Goro, here's his fight.
Yep, very weird. I agree.
Anyway, Kason, our boy Dan Nolt, a.k.a. Fatty McGee, he writes in, he says, I loved Mortal Kombat. Cheesy? Yes. But it had such a heavy dose of nostalgia that anyone who grew up playing those games would enjoy it. I agree.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Kason, we got a few more things we're going to talk about real quick. I want to talk about two things that I watched on HBO Max. The first is called Greenland. This is a movie with Gerard Butler that came out last year. Why am I talking about this? Because I liked it that much. If you want a thrill ride, if you want just an entertaining, great 2 hours of action, excitement, fun, kind of fun, not really fun, that's a wrong word, watch Greenland on HBO Max. This is a disaster movie about a comet that is coming to Earth, breaking apart into a million mini comets and just wrecking the planet. Gerard Butler, wow. What's he doing? Oh, I think we know. He's got to get his family to safety. Because that's what Gerard Butler does. So this whole movie we're spent just watching him go through the motions, trying to save his family, trying to get him to safety. I think the thing that I liked about this movie, Greenland, the most, this was way less Roland Emmerich, big disaster, like things exploding, and way more like people focused. Like, how would people react to the end of the world? If you knew like the end was coming and there was nothing you could do about it, how would people react? What would the panic look like? What would people be willing to do to like help their family? It was really cool. And it was one of those things where I just like seeing it all play out. I was very intrigued by it. And I feel like Gerard Butler is just always solid. He's always reliable, likable. I really liked it.
That's awesome. Yeah, this is definitely one that I want to check out. So I'm excited.
That's called Greenland. That's on HBO Max. Kason, next up, Those Who Wish Me Dead, starring Angelina Jolie. Now, I made the decision to put this on my most anticipated films of the year. Why did I do that? Because of the director, Taylor Sheridan, who most people know from Wind River. Most people know as the writer of Sicario, Hell or High Water, the show Yellowstone with Kevin Costner. Mm-hmm. This guy is a straight talent, and I couldn't wait to see what he did with this movie, Those Who Wish Me Dead, starring Angelina Jolie, taking place in the Montana wilderness, a couple hitmen trying to murder a small child. I mean, this sounded great, Kason.
This sounds like right in his wheelhouse, honestly.
Unfortunately,
not a fan?
It was very mediocre. It definitely should not have been on my most anticipated list. It was definitely a letdown. I'm not going to say it was bad. It was just very watered down. This felt, like I always say, the type of movie where it's Sunday, it's 3:30 p.m., you're in the recliner, and you turn on TBS. And what comes on? Those Who Wish Me Dead, starring Angelina Jolie. Was just very much like I'm watching this on TBS on a Sunday. And that's not what I wanted from one of my most hyped of the year.
Yeah, that's too bad, man. I mean, I was excited about this too, just because of Sheridan, but I guess you can't win them all. How was Jolie?
She was pretty good. I think miscast. I just didn't really buy her like in the role. I don't think she was bad. She's good. She's a likable. She's a charismatic actress. I just feel like she wasn't really right for this part. It felt like a struggle between the Taylor Sheridan that we know from Wind River, from Hell or High Water, and kind of more like a studio, like let's try to make this a little more like not entertaining, but you know what I mean, souped up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And ultimately, it just kind of fell flat. Still some great parts. Obviously, our boy John Barenthal's in there. John Barenthal has got to be the most consistent actor working, other than Jesse Plemons. Anything this dude is in is just like, oh, John Barenthal's in there. He's going to be fantastic.
Yeah. He comes to punish.
He killed it, dude. Anyway, maybe check it out if it's Sunday at 3:15. You're in your recliner. Watch Those Who Wish Me Dead on HBO Max.
Sweet.
Kason, the last thing, I promise the last thing, is we got to talk about a TV show. This is something you were hyped on. That is the Amazon Prime animated comic book show, Invincible.
That's right. If those descriptors aren't enough to get you excited, I don't know what will.
It's not an anime.
It's not an anime, but it is an Amazon Prime animated comic book show. Yeah, man, this show is so good. So good. It's based on, yeah, like you said, comic books called Invincible. The creator of the comic books was in charge of putting together the show, so that's always a good starting point.
Well, Kason, we should mention, too, the creator of the comic books is Robert Kirkman, creator of The Walking Dead.
Right.
So a lot of pedigree there.
Already established himself. This show was about a teenage superhero named Mark, who is played by Steven Yeun, and his relationship with his father, who is named Omni-Man, played by J.K. Simmons, who is essentially kind of a Superman analog in this universe. It's awesome. I think it has a lot of real creative elements that really set it apart. It's almost got Rick and Morty vibes to me, where they just go off in some crazy fun directions with the plot that I find really enjoyable. And then the characters are just great, and I think, as I said maybe before on something we recorded, I can't remember, I think the last two episodes of the show are just the perfect example of sticking the landing. It's only 8 episodes long, easy watch. I would definitely check it out if you like superheroes, if you like comic book stuff, whatever. But fair warning, just because it's animated, it is not a kid show, definitely more kind of adult themes, I would say.
Oh, yeah, I think that's an understatement. This show, like you said, despite being a cartoon, this has some of the most, like, brutal... I don't know what's up with Robert Kirkman, but he knows how to punish the audience. I mean, yeah. There are sequences in this show that are legit hard to watch, despite the fact it's a cartoon. And I like that. I like pushing the boundaries. I like not holding anything back. But man alive, the final episode, Kason, of this show... It really reminded me, like, the only thing I could compare it to or think of is another Robert Kirkman product, which was the Negan Walking Dead moment with the baseball bat.
Yeah.
Just watching punishment being dished out when you don't want it to be dished out. And it's like, man alive, they make you feel it. So, yeah, definitely do not go into the show thinking you're watching something for kids. The thing I like about this, though, Invincible actually reminds me of in the 90s when I was a kid watching like Batman the Animated Series. It has that kind of artwork, like that kind of animation, I should say, and almost that kind of like storytelling where they're telling real stories that actually have weight to them, have meaning to them. And it, you know, it's not dumbed down at all. But I also feel like it's not something that it still feels like a cartoon. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
It's still done in a way that feels like an animated show, the way the characters talk, the way they move, the way they act. It's a little like, I don't want to use the word rigid, but you know what I mean. A little bit like wooden, almost intentionally so.
Yes, for sure.
And I like it. I dig the whole vibe of the show. But man, when this thing goes hard, it goes hard. So
yeah, also the supporting voice cast is just ridiculous. I mean, this show has... We got Luke Skywalker, we got Mahershala Ali, we got Spock in here, Jason Matsukis. Who's the mom?
I love that you're not even saying their real names.
You know who I'm talking about. You know what I'm
Zachary
what I'm saying.
Quinto, dude.
Yeah, Zachary Quinto. You got what's the?
We don't have Leonard Nimoy. He's dead.
That's true. Yeah, I guess I should clarify.
I'm William Bell. Fringe reference, deep cut.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, it's anyway. Crazy though.
Kason, you nailed it, though, mentioning Rick and Morty, because you're right. Some of these side stories and some of these little, like, tangents they go off on. Seth Rogen, speaking of, are they so funny. Like,
and Justin Roiland's in it for, like, 5 seconds.
Justin Roiland from Rick and Morty. But anyway, that's called Invincible. That's only, I believe, what, 8, 9 episodes?
8 episodes, man. Get
8 episodes. That is on Amazon Prime. Couldn't recommend it enough.
Season 2 confirmed. Hype train.
Perfect. Kason, that's what we've been watching. That's a little longer than we're normally going to go for, but like we said, we got to catch up on a lot of the things from the past few months.
We've been watching too much.
I mean, that's not even... I've been watching more than that. That's just all I want to talk about, you know?
Don't even get me started.
You know what? Let's get into Scoob exclamation point, because
no,
I got a lot of thoughts.
No. I think we're out of time on that segment.
Okay.
Let's keep it rolling.
Kason, moving on. Let's move on to a segment that we're going to call the top 3 topics of the show.
I like that name.
Yeah, it kind of has a little bit of a ring to it.
Yeah.
Might put it on some t-shirts.
Oh, yeah.
Kason, the top 3 topics of the season 2 premiere. Let's start with this one because it is the season 2 premiere. I want to pick your brain a little bit, Kason. Let's talk about the best and the worst season 2s that we can think of.
I love it. I think this is a great question.
Kason, why don't you go first? What is the best season 2 that you have or that you can think of?
Okay. So I thought about this long and hard. And, I was a little conflicted on this one because we had talked about it before. I think that initially it seems like this entire show is such a high quality that I would be reluctant to just call out the second season as being like significantly amazing. But really, the more that I thought about it, I think that season two of this show is truly the masterpiece example of the show. And I remember as I was watching season two of the show, I was so blown away by the quality. I think I legit told you that I thought it was the best show I'd ever seen in my life.
Kason, now you're obviously referring to The Equalizer starring Queen Latifah, right?
Oh, on my CBS? Gosh. No, Keenan. I'm referring to the show that I would only recommend to people who are a little bit weird on the inside, Hannibal. Mads Mikkelsen, Hugh Dancy, coming off of a wonderfully messed up season one, going into season two, having the amazing plot structure where they show you the end of the season at the beginning, and then having the entire season kind of slowly unfold to build up to that moment. This is an amazing season of TV. It develops everything that started in season one. It has some amazing twists on the source material, and it does incredible character development of both of our main characters in this show, with a finale that I truly think is one of the best finale viewing experiences I've ever had. So I gotta go Hannibal.
Fantastic choice. Kason, Hannibal season one was incredible, but very much like a procedural show.
Yes.
And kind of felt like that. Hannibal season three almost felt like two seasons kind of crammed into one.
Yeah.
Because of the restrictions on what they could do, or, you know, maybe not getting a season four. And I still loved it, but I feel like it felt a little mixed because of that. Like,
yeah,
almost felt
yeah.
like they needed more time to develop those. Season two was perfect. It was just the perfect balance of procedural and more, long-term storytelling, I guess you would say. And it just did everything season one set up and just amplified it to the 10th degree. And I think that's a great choice.
Yeah. Thank you.
Kason, my pick for best season two of in television history of all time is not The Equalizer with Queen Latifah.
Oh,
we haven't got
gosh.
That yet. That was a trick question. There is no season two yet.
Not yet.
But Kason, the best season two of all time is none other than The Office, of course.
Oh, good choice. Good choice.
Kason, season two of The Office was such a dramatic step up in quality from season one. It's not even funny. Season two is what most people have etched into their minds. I think when we reference The Office, when we talk about it, that's most people's linchpin for the show. Like a lot of the quotes, a lot of the episodes, whether it's like the first time we see the Dundies, the time when Michael Scott burnt his foot on the George Foreman grill,
yep.
the sexual harassment episode. The finale with Pam and Jim,
yeah.
forget about
Amazing.
It. Oh my gosh.
Amazing.
It's just fantastic, Kason. I love The Office so much. There's so many great seasons. I would say seasons probably 2, 3, 4, and 5 are kind of like the heart of the show, the prime.
Yes, yes, yes.
But I still got to go back to season two and say that's the best. I think a big reason too, even though I know there's a lot of like, in retrospect, a lot of people look back and they don't like Jim and Pam as much. They think they're kind of bad people. But I feel like in season two, that story, just the pining and kind of the love
they
that they
won't
had,
they back and
it,
forth.
Yeah, it was so good.
And it's when you so good. It really
when you
is.
Combine that emotion with the laugh out loud, just ridiculous comedy of the show, it was just such a special season.
Yeah, man, I think you're totally right. I feel like this is Michael Scott at his prime, and I also think that that moment in the finale with Jim and Pam just hit so hard, and it was, like, so satisfying because you really didn't know if it was the type of show that was going to go there, you know, or if it was just going to kind of keep messing around, like, okay, this is kind of a fun underlying thing, but I feel like they really established, no, like, we are trying to develop these characters and, like, push the plot forward, and it's awesome.
Yeah, and I think these comedies, the thing that's so interesting, like, because another example would be Parks and Rec, which had yep. a very similar trajectory, where the first season was kind of rocky, and then in season two, they really found their footing. And it's cool because, similar to The Office, it's like Parks and Rec, you feel like they get a feel for the characters, and they're not afraid to tweak them a little bit. And it's interesting because Amy Poehler's character on Parks and Rec went through a similar transformation as Michael Scott, where it's almost like season one, the first like eight episodes or whatever, just a little eight episode season in, for both shows. Michael Scott and what was Amy Schumer's name?
Amy Poehler.
Why do I keep saying Amy Schumer? That's disgusting. I'm sorry, Kaysen.
It's okay. Leslie Kaysen, Knope,
I think we got to restart the podcast. I mentioned Amy Schumer on the pod. Oh, gosh.
You messed it up real bad.
I don't feel good, Kaysen. Oh, my God. I'm Amy. Anyway.
Keep that out of here, please.
I don't like her. Kaysen, Amy Poehler. How dare I disrespect Amy Poehler like that?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Leslie Knope and Michael Scott, in season one, they were both a little, like, unlikable.
Yeah.
And in season two, they completely course-corrected that and made them, like, a little bit more of a balanced, like, you know, sympathetic versus kind of bumbling, not so likable.
Yeah, totally. And Parks and Rec is interesting because I did think about that one, but I think the difference there is that although season two does dramatically improve from season one, I think that they continue to improve in subsequent seasons with Parks and Rec.
Yeah. Whereas I would say season three is the prime.
Yeah, I would agree. But even beyond that, the show is still like so high quality. Whereas I think The Office really does kind of stay high quality in seasons three and four and then kind of start to fluctuate a little bit more, you know? Like season two is really the identifiable pinnacle, I think, of the show.
Kaysen, one more best of that I want to give a shout out to is in, you know, if Cronindrome is listening to this, our boy Trevor Howard, he's just going to have to suck it up because I know he's not a fan of the show, but man, oh man, the season two of The Leftovers is on another planet.
I couldn't believe you didn't pick this one.
I think you could actually argue The Leftovers season two, and I know Cronindrome is just pounding his head against his steering wheel right now, but it is the best season two ever. I'm not changing my answer. I'm still saying The Office, but I'm saying what season two did for The Leftovers took it from being a show that people looked at and were like, yeah, that's not too bad, to people being like, wow, what is this show?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I've seen a turnaround like that where people were mildly interested in a season and then season two came along and it's like, man alive, talk about Damon Lindelof being in the groove when he wrote this. It is like firing on all cylinders, every episode just leaving you like feeling all kinds of emotions and all kind of intrigue. It was so good.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people say that, so...
Kaysen, they can't all be good. Hopefully our season two is, but we don't know that yet. It could be a huge stinker. So why don't we talk about the worst season twos? What do you got for the worst?
This one's easy, man. I mean, nothing tanks harder than the unfortunate season two of Friday Night Lights. Speaking of Jesse Plemons being so consistent, let's try and erase this one from our memory because I can't even go back and watch him trying to walk around finding a place to bury the body of that stupid guy that whoever Tyra, whatever her name was, ended up. Anyway, no spoilers
for that show. What is this show, Riverdale?
Yeah, man, this was a huge dip. Thank goodness they course corrected in subsequent seasons, but I don't know what happened. I don't even have that many more thoughts about it.
Here's what I'll say real quick about, because that's a great choice. Friday Night Lights season two is so deep in the crapper. I can't argue with it. I think one of the problems is the reason it sucks so hard is because season one was so perfect.
Yeah, that's true.
So when you take perfection and you can, like, if I just saw season two as kind of like a standalone thing, I don't think I would have thought it was as bad. But
yeah,
when you compare it to season one, it's so, so, so lesser than, and I feel like it's even more infuriating because it's almost like the producers or like the powers that be, they didn't have enough confidence in just sticking to the formula, like sticking to the rawness and the realness that people liked, and they felt like they had to soup it up and give it these soap opera BS storylines, and that's not why people tuned in.
Yes, and yeah, and along with that, it's like they took the characters that they made you love in season one and then just turned them into goofy people making irrational decisions.
Yeah, and I mean, like you said, thank the Lord, though, they did course correct. They were I give them credit for that. They were smart enough to realize, like, people don't like this.
They brought it back hard, big time, thanks to Michael B. Jordan showing
up. Vince, my man, dude.
Wow, what a show.
Great choice, Kaysen. My choice for worst season two of all time is, I hate I have to do it, and maybe this doesn't count, but we're going to say it counts because I'm making the rules. The worst season two of all time is True Detective season two.
Ooh, that's rough, man. Wow.
A lot of people would consider the first season of True Detective one of the greatest TV series in history. McConaughey, Woody Harrelson, Time is a Flat Circle. All right, all right, all right. It's everyone's loving it. Everyone's hyped. When season two rolls around, we got the cast. We got Vince Vaughn. We got Rachel McAdams. We got Taylor Kitsch from Friday Night Lights. Great cast, new story. It's just like, what the hell happened? This is the definition of Nick Palazzotto, I don't know how to say his last name, but creator and writer of True Detective. I think he just truly got too much like in his own head. Like yeah. It's almost like
probably too much.
It really feels like he just overwrote the hell out of season two. Like he kept thinking like, it's not smart enough. It's not complex enough. It's not deep enough. It's not like any of this, you know what I mean? And he just overwrote it so badly that it was just this convoluted like mess that had no one to latch on to. You know who else I forgot was in this? Was Colin Farrell. He was actually really good.
I love Colin Farrell.
There were moments of greatness in season two. It wasn't a total disaster, but again, like a Friday Night Lights, the dip in quality was just too much of a dip, Kaysen.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I feel like there are a lot of easy direct comparisons between True Detective and Fargo, the TV show, and I feel like one of them just nailed it in the second season, somehow overcame all of the, you know, the hype and the expectations and just delivered. And obviously the other one didn't. So what are you going to do? Winners and losers.
I still want to watch True Detective season three with Mahershala. But
oh, yeah, me too. Because I heard,
I heard
a
that
bit
kind
better.
Of exists like in the middle where it's not as good as season one, but not as crappy as season two.
Yes, that's what I've heard too.
Anyway, Kaysen, those were the best and worst season twos we could think of. And again, hopefully our show goes into the upper pantheon of winners and not losers.
Definitely. I think it will.
We'll see. I mean, so far we're off to a rough start, but you know, we're going to try to pick it up.
We're going to pick it up. We got to have the best elevation over the course of season two.
I feel like 11 more episodes, we'll be in our groove.
Yeah, definitely.
Kaysen, next topic. Topic number two out of our top three topics of the show. Let's talk about Loki. This is a show that when you're listening to this, hopefully, it drops on Wednesday. What is that? June 9th.
Keenan, hasn't this character died like five times?
Oh, he's dead. He's back. He's dead. Oh, okay. He's back. He's back. He's dead. He's still back. He's dead. Kaysen. Okay. The reason I want to talk about Loki is around. Because we got the Twitter reactions. You know, I love some Twitter reactions. I'm going to read five of them. We're going to talk about our thoughts on Loki and see what you think of this. First off, our boy John Campia, who I love, he said the Loki show is outstanding. Marvel continues to change things up. This is unlike anything they've done before. A focus on the God of Mischief that gives us our best look at his character, his fears, his insecurities, and his glorious purpose. Oh, and Owen Wilson rocks.
Wow.
Case and our boy Brandon Davis, he writes, Loki is hands down...
Who the heck is that?
Don't worry about who these people are, Kaysen. Okay. They're people who have seen the first two episodes.
All right.
Kaysen, Brandon Davis says, Loki is hands down my favorite first TV episode for Marvel Studios yet. Tom Hiddleston is just too good in the role, picking up 2012's Loki instantly. He's brilliant. Early exposition comes with awesome details for MCU fans. I really like the start. Lots of potential here.
Wow.
Kaysen, our boy Jermaine Lussier, he says the first two episodes of Loki are catnip for Marvel fans.
Wow.
Dense on world building, callbacks, and mystery. Hiddleston is on fire. I don't think literally, but he's on fire.
Maybe literally.
The new characters rule, and there's a ton to unpack and unravel. It's a little light on action so far, but I didn't care. I fell hard for this new Marvel world.
Wow.
Kaysen, last up, our boy Ariel, don't know his last name. He says Loki gets off to a rough start with episode one, which is poorly paced and written, but necessary to introduce the world of the TVA. Episode two is a step up from that. The plot is introduced and the stage is set for a hard-hitting rest of the season.
Now, is that dude still okay? Do we know if Disney sent anyone to his house yet, or is he still... Maybe someone should check on him. I don't know.
Exactly. Feige's not liking that. Case, and last up, our boy Eric Davis. Just pretend these guys are a boy. Our boy Eric Davis says, I've seen the first two episodes of Loki, and I'm loving it so far. It's a time-traveling detective show that's laying groundwork for the MCU multiverse while also being about identity and confronting ugly truths about ourselves. The Tom Hiddleston-Owen Wilson bromance is my favorite.
Okay, there you go. Those are
Kason, those are some early reactions for the first two episodes of Loki. Just want to know, what do you think of those reactions? What is your hype level for this show, and anything you want to say about it?
Keenan, I think early reactions are starting to just become completely, you know, unreliable. I mean, I still like to read them because my hype level for this show is very high. I think that it's going to be awesome. I think that from the trailers, it looks super unique, really visually interesting. Just the fact that Owen Wilson is in the show is like a huge positive for it, because that means they're going to be taking some risks, hopefully. But I love it. I love the character. I love how weird it looks. I think it's going to be bizarre in a really good way. As far as the reactions go, I don't know. I mean, these people probably just think they gotta, you know, suck up to Disney as much as possible in order to get screeners to things or whatever. I don't know.
This is true. That's why I like the guy that actually was kind of talk some crap about it.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. You're right. Every single Disney screener or Disney like Twitter reaction is exactly the same. It's always like, great, big fun, lots of heart, love the characters.
Main character is on fire in this role. Just
main character
good.
Overcomes obstacles. I like.
Yeah.
Kason, remember when Last Jedi came out and Patton Oswalt on Twitter, and that is a comedian's name, that is not Oswald Cobblepot from Batman Returns. Patton Oswalt came out and said, Luke Skywalker is John Wick.
Yeah.
And then I went to see Last Jedi, and he was just an old, crumbled shell of a human being that did something for 6 minutes in the movie.
Some would say he's the opposite of John Wick in the movie.
Hey, Patton Oswalt, that's not John Wick.
Patton Oswalt clearly getting John Wick confused with some other
character. Patton Oswalt getting John Wick confused with Morgan Freeman in that movie where he is in a rest home. Anyway, so yeah, advanced reactions. I mean, I'm glad people are loving it. But again, like you said, we just got to see it for ourselves, and I'm excited. Tom Hiddleston is an icon. I can't wait to see Owen Wilson, though. I do want to see if they're smart enough to bring in Vince Vaughn and just give him a cameo
scene
with Owen Wilson.
That would be amazing, truly. I could even see him fitting in that kind of universe. But, yeah, I mean, this I feel like is reliable. It seems more in the vein to me of WandaVision than Cap, which I'm way higher on WandaVision than Falcon Winter Soldier. So to me, I'm more excited about that because I like to see them take risks and do weird things, because I assume they have a little bit of like a sunk cost mentality in that, where they're probably thinking, okay, if this is already going to be weird and maybe like ostracize some people, then we may as well just make it as weird as we want to, you know? So I'm into it.
Absolutely, man. I think this also will have more like big time implications for like the multiverse and things that we're not really expecting, especially from these reactions. It seems like it really does a lot of like kind of, like they said, world building for bigger things to come, whether it's in Doctor Strange or Spider-Man. So I am hyped.
Now, is this show 6 episodes or 8 episodes?
Ooh, good question. Don't know.
Is this a half hour thing or
no? I think the first episode is like 54 minutes and the second one's like 51 minutes.
All right, cool.
Kason, as someone who I know is concerned with episode length, you were the guy who every single week on WandaVision you text me and say only 31 minutes.
It's true. That's annoying.
Anyway, Kason, that's Loki. So we'll have thoughts on that next week. We will give our thoughts on episode one. And,
hey, what the heck's up with this Wednesday release schedule? Why are they doing this to us?
What? I don't know. Also, what's up with Disney releasing things at 3 in the morning?
Yeah, I don't know, man.
Yes, we know it's because it's 12 on the West Coast. Still, if you put something out on release day at like 7 p.m., build hype, say like, tonight's the night, here it comes. Instead, you have all these uber dorks on YouTube and stuff watching something at 3 a.m. and then spoiling the hell out of it. So when you wake up, it's like, oh, this person's dead. Cool.
Yep. It is very unfortunate.
Anyway, it is what it is. That's Loki. We'll have thoughts on that next week. Super hyped, Kason.
Super hyped.
Kaysen, topic three of the top three topics of the show. That's a lot of tease right there. It comes to us courtesy of our boy Nate Smith. This guy wrote in with a great question. He said, with things starting to open back up and the success of the various streaming channels, how do you think movie theaters will look going forward?
Good question, Nate Smith. Do you want me to
take
it?
What do you think, Kaysen?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what? How about I'll take it first. I'll give my thoughts on this, because Nate Smith, you're firing at us with a good question here. Here's the thing. I think even before COVID hit, unfortunately, theaters were kind of on a trajectory of only really showing and profiting from big blockbuster movies.
Okay.
It seemed like the indie films were not really hitting like they used to 20 years ago, we'll even say 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And they kind of just became a big Disney factory. I think that's unfortunately going to continue tenfold.
Yeah.
I think theaters will bounce back. We're already seeing that. COVID's not even really completely dead, you know? I mean, it is, but it's not as dead as it will be 6 months from now, let's say. In Quiet Place Part 2, movies like Godzilla versus Kong, even Conjuring made, I think, $25 million, which is great this opening weekend. So it's showing that people will go back to the theater, but I do not see anything other than big marquee titles succeeding, at least for a while. And like I said, the way things were going before COVID, I don't know if we'll ever see that again. One thing I want to pick your brain on, Kaysen, is just how you think things like Disney Premier Access, obviously Warner Brothers putting every movie on HBO Max day and date, how do you think that's going to affect, you know, theaters for the near future?
Yeah, that's a great question. I agree with your assessment, what you said before. I think that, unfortunately, it really seems like Disney is committing to this kind of simultaneous streaming release pattern. And it's kind of confusing to me, because I feel like if they were not committing to it moving forward, they would not be doing so many things like that this summer. And I could be wrong on that, because maybe the situation is more, for example, they're putting Luca out on Disney Plus because they just don't have room for it in their theatrical release schedule with everything being so crammed together because of delays. But,
no.
You know, yeah, I don't really feel like that's the case either. So it's very concerning to me, because I would rather see most things in the theater. And I can't imagine how they're making more money on that type of thing. I guess if it costs $30 to watch it at home, they're just assuming that more people are going to do that than take their whole family to the theater to go see something. But I don't know. It's kind of disappointing. But as far as like what the short-term future looks like, it kind of seems like this is going to be something we're having for quite a while. The HBO Max thing, I think, will definitely go away. I think they're probably already kind of regretting that decision to do the simultaneous release, because I think if that continues into the future, it will definitely look like a paid model like Disney, where you have to pay some price to watch it at home.
So, yeah, no question. I mean, regarding Warner Brothers, they're losing tons and tons. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they're losing so much money, which is known, like by doing this. So yeah, I don't know how they're feeling about that. As far as Disney goes, two things. Number one, I think Disney is insane for doing the premiere access for a movie like Black Widow, which comes out, what, in a month? Like July,
yeah, in
6th
July.
Or 7th. Why are they doing this? By July, people will be going back to the theater. I think it's for movies like Cruella, Raya and the Last Dragon, it works. You don't do this for something like Black Widow. You put this in theaters only and tell people, if you want to see this, you go to the theater and see it. And I don't know how Feige feels about that. I would love to know, though. I don't think he's happy.
I completely agree. I mean, I think it would even work better to put it on like a slightly delayed schedule and just say like, okay, this is theaters only for a month. You know what
yeah.
I mean? At least before
yes.
you put it on streaming.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Second off, I want to talk about what Disney is doing to Pixar. It is not right. It is ridiculous. We know people at Pixar are mad as hell because, number one, you put Soul, winner of the Academy Award for Best Animated Film, you put it on Disney Plus, not even Premier Access. You just put it out for free. Okay, that's during COVID. That's in December. Whatever, I can kind of see that from a business side. You get subscriptions up based on that. But to turn around and do it again with Luca, to not even give people like me and you who love Pixar and would die to go to the theater. I shouldn't use that term, but you know what I mean.
We would
give anything to go to the theater and watch Luca next or in a couple weeks when this comes out. And we don't even have the chance to do that. We have to watch it at home. That is not right. These people, these animators, spent years of their life making this movie. It's exactly what Denis says about Dune. Like, these, we work too hard. We want people to experience this in a theater in the best possible way, not at home on their phone, on their laptop. You know what I mean?
It is ridiculous, man. I mean, this is Pixar. This is, like, undeniably, you know, the premier animated movie studio in the world, I would say. And, like, I mean, it's just crazy, man. Yeah, you're right. I mean, these people are making movies for the theater. Like, they're not trying to make animated movies to just be streaming dumps. Even though I'm sure it's going to get a ton of views on Disney Plus, it's just like, wow, I would be upset for sure.
I think the way better decision would have, because I don't know how you screw over Pixar twice like that.
How are you putting Raya premier access when you're putting these Pixar movies for free?
You should have put Raya, if you're going to do this, for free on Disney Plus.
I mean, just out of, like, equity and respect to Pixar.
Yeah, and I loved Raya, but I'm just saying, like, that to me, to go back-to-back with Soul and Luca, the disrespect, Kaysen. This is like old school WWE when Ric Flair would come out and just, like, start chest-slapping dudes. Like, just the disrespect is out of control, Kaysen.
Yep, it really is. Crazy.
Anyway, so that's our little tangent with Disney. But yeah, the movie theaters going forward, big blockbusters, they're still going to bring in the money. I think they will get back to normal. But I think the smaller kind of mid-tier movies are in trouble.
I agree, unfortunately.
But, I mean, final note, with all the streaming services now, I think they will still live. They just won't live at the theater. Like, we'll still get those at home.
I agree. Do you think I should buy some AMC stock, Keenan?
Kaysen, I did, back when the GameStop stock was like going ballistic, just to mess around and have some fun, I bought $50 worth of AMC stock.
How's it going?
Okay. A few days ago, this would have been on Wednesday, it was, my $50 turned into $266.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not joking. And all I could think about was if only I bought $100,
yeah,
$500. You know what I mean? Yep. Like, you start thinking those things, and it's like, how did I not see it? Of course AMC was going to explode.
Yeah, man. You think I should jump in now? I don't know.
Too late.
Really? You think so?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean,
well, you better redeem your large popcorn, because did you read how they're giving all stockholders a free large popcorn?
No way.
You got to get on that, man.
It's all worth it, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I think a large popcorn at AMC is like $53. So really, yeah, that's me already coming out ahead.
Yeah, yeah. I think a large popcorn actually costs like one stock. So.
Oh, man. Hey, AMC employee giving me my popcorn, whose favorite movie on his pin is, of course, Fight Club.
Yeah.
How you doing, buddy?
Exactly.
Anyway, Kaysen, that was fun. Those were our three topics of the show. Should we do that next week?
The top three topics. I think
my
we should.
My bad. I messed up. I messed it up already.
Close enough.
Top three topics. Kaysen, let's move on. Okay. Kaysen. Oh my gosh, Kaysen. Kaysen, Kaysen, Kaysen.
What?
Kaysen, you know me. You've known me for a while. Uh-huh. Now, you know there's two things in this world that I love.
Oh my gosh. What are they, Keenan?
The first thing is getting vaccinated, yet still wearing three masks when I go into Cracker Barrel.
Okay.
The second thing are movie trailers.
Ooh, I like those too.
It feels so good to say that again, Kaysen. Kaysen, we got some movie trailers we got to talk about. The first one up is a trailer starring our boy, Hugh Jackman.
Oh my gosh.
It's a movie called Reminisce. Wait, did I say that? No, Reminiscence. Apologies to Hugh. It's called Reminiscence. It comes out August 20th. Kaysen, what's up with Reminiscence? This is directed by, is her name Lisa Joy?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Lisa Joy,
Lisa
co-creator.
Joy of Westworld, right?
Of Westworld. What do you think of this trailer? Is Hugh Jackman bringing the heat?
Man, I don't know what the heck is happening in this trailer. I have no idea what's going on. And I think it looks crazy. So I am very excited to see what the reviews look like. I was getting a lot of Inception vibes with the weird voiceover at the beginning, trying to get me to come on a journey with Hugh Jackman. I'm down for it. I'm down for the journey. So I have literally no idea what's happening here. Do you have any semblance of what the plot is?
I thought this looked pretty good, but this is definitely, I guess you can say this about a lot of movies, but this movie Reminiscence is definitely something that looks like it can either go very right or very wrong.
Yeah.
Like, anytime you get a complex plot where it's like very like complicated and twisty and turny and like a lot of like backstory and like you said, like an Inception. It's just how well is this thing written? Is it boring? Is it clunky? Do we care? So visually, it looked cool. It looked like a mix of just like Inception, big blockbuster action with very like cerebral, high concept stuff. It's all just execution, and we don't know that yet. So we'll see.
We don't know. She's got the Nolan connection, so who knows?
Yeah, that's Reminiscence. It looks like a real head scratcher.
Is it
going
to be a musical? Hard to tell.
I hope he sings I Dreamed a Dream When Time Gone By. Was that him?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
That was Anne Hathaway.
Yeah, that was Anne Hathaway. Come on, man.
She dreamed the dream. Hugh Jackman dreamed no dream.
She fell off the planet, I feel like.
Yeah, what happened? I feel like with Anne Hathaway, people were just like, we're good. We got enough.
What? I love Anne Hathaway.
You would, Kaysen. You probably love Anne Hathaway and Kate Hudson equally.
Okay, I don't know about that. Give me a break.
Is Bride Wars one of your favorite movies?
It's up there.
Next up, we got a movie also dropping August 20th called Demonic. Wowza. Now, the reason I'm excited about this is because this guy crawled out of the hole he was in and finally decided to make another movie. That's our boy Neil Blomkamp. Who's Neil Blomkamp? Director of District 9, Elysium, and Chappie. Now, The knock on Neil Blomkamp is he pretty much just made the same movie three times in a row.
Yeah. I don't know about that. He made a progressively worse version of the same movie.
Exactly. It kept getting worse and every iteration. He was like, I have all these special effects just saved on my hard drive. We're just going to use those again, but in a worse movie.
It's like he made District 9. And then he tried to make the same movie but made it worse with Elysium. And then he was like, "All right, for my third movie, I'm just gonna use some like cut footage from District 9 and
Elysium,
splice it together into a movie. It'll be decent."
Kaysen, Neil Blomkamp also has one of the best lines of all time in Elysium, which we've mentioned on this podcast, where the villain played by Charlton Copley. Whatever his name is, he says to the girl in the movie, "At first, I was going to heal you, but now I will never heal you."
Oh my gosh. Hate
somebody
to hear
wrote
it.
That line. Audience, someone wrote the line, "At first, I was going to heal you, but now I will never heal you."
They probably took that from like Final Fantasy IX or something.
Anyway, Blomkamp's back. He's got this movie called Demonic. He's dipping his toe in the horror genre. Kaysen, what did you think of this trailer?
Man, this looks scary. I don't know how I feel about it. It looks pretty disturbing to me.
I thought it looked awesome.
Well, it does, but I'm just saying, like, it looks very unsettling. I don't know. I'm gonna have to feel it out.
See, I guess my question is, Blomkamp is great with visuals. Like, even though he did make the same movie three times in a row, his stuff looks gritty, it looks real, it looks lived in, and he clearly brought that over to Demonic. Like, he just has the same eye for everything he does, and I'm excited to see how that translates to horror. I guess from this trailer, which I really liked, I'm curious, is this going to be more of a straight-up horror film? Like a possession-type movie, or is this more like an Alex Garland Annihilation weird sci-fi mixed with horror,
of looks like that, because it looks like there's some weird like Black Mirror type stuff going on with the house being like created and stuff. I don't know.
I agree, and that's what gets me more excited than if it was just a standard horror movie.
Yeah, me too, but I mean the name seems kind of weird and like on the nose if that was the case, but I don't know. We'll see.
It's just crazy that Blomkamp came back with something like this. I mean, he's been gone for a while. I am excited to see it. I feel like we've talked about him disappearing and like what's been going on with that. So I'm glad he is he's back.
I like it.
Kaysen, next up, I want to talk about our boy M. Night Shyamalan.
Here we
go. He's back. You can't stop this guy. He's got a movie coming out July 23rd. It's called Old, starring Martin Scorsese.
Keenan, I can never forgive this man for what he did to my beloved childhood cartoon.
But what's that, Kaysen?
Avatar The Last Airbender.
But, see, Kaysen, the thing is, I don't think you like the fact they were blue. I think that was your biggest holdup. Now, in Avatar, I think they were blue because it was a cool visual style for the 3D glasses and stuff, right?
Now I can never forgive you. Anyway, yeah, this guy, he's been making movies forever. He had some hits. He had some real duds. I feel like now he's just kind of found his wheelhouse of, like, middle ground movies where he's not even, like, trying that hard anymore. You know what I mean?
That's smart.
Gonna make a movie that feels like a TV episode of like the Twilight Zone. Whatever. It's gonna be fun. It's gonna make a moderate amount of money.
As long as he's not still making Jaden Smith sci-fi films, I'm cool with it.
Exactly. So I think that's exactly what this looks like. I feel like it looks fun. It looks mildly interesting. I'm sure I'll leave the theater and talk to you about it for one night, think it was good, and then probably never think about it again afterwards.
See, my thing is, this movie Old is about like a family that goes to this like hidden beach, and they find that like time moves faster and they start rapidly aging. So the little kids end up becoming teenagers, end up becoming adults, and eventually, I'm guessing, become, you know,
old
senior
people.
Citizens. It's funny you said the word fun, because I know what you mean, but I feel like this does not look fun. In a good way. I'm excited to see how dark this gets, but this premise is fantastic. The idea of rapidly aging and seeing your children, like I think of my kids, you know, who are 4 and 2. It's like seeing my daughter who's 4, all of a sudden I turn around and she's 17.
Yeah.
It makes me feel uncomfortable, and it makes me feel like you feel sad because time is the one thing you can never get back. Right.
Whoa.
And I know
I'm going deep with this.
I'm on M. Night's wavelength.
I guess you are.
Anyway, so I think this looks awesome. I want to see where it goes. I hope, like you said, this seems like an old like folklore tale, you know, kind of like something that you would tell kids and scare the crap out of them before they go to bed. So I would prefer he sticks with this than try to go back to the big budget schlock of like Avatar After Earth.
100%. He has proven that he is not competent to do that.
So it kind of looks like the vibe. I know M. Night didn't direct this, but I think he wrote it and produced it. Remember that movie Devil about those people in the elevator?
He did produce that.
You kind of take a contained location, set up this mystery and intrigue, and try to figure out how we're going to solve it.
Yeah. We got Hereditary guy in here. Probably Nat still Wolf. Possessed. Yeah.
Anyway, Kaysen, that's called Old. That comes out July 23rd. We'll see what M. Night has in store for us. Kaysen, next trailer we're going to want to talk about is one of your most anticipated films of the year.
Oh my gosh.
That is the Edgar Wright directed Last Night in Soho, which drops October 22nd, Halloween.
Keenan, now we're on to the real meat of the movie season coming up. I mean, we're talking about demonic. We're talking about Old. We got these washed up directors trying to stay relevant out here with these little folk tales or whatever. Now, what I need in my life is Edgar Wright doing a hard pivot into the world of psychological horror. This movie looks like my jam. It looks like I am going to love it. I think the style is going to be next level. And obviously, Anya Taylor-Joy, my MVP previously, is the star. So how could I not be more excited? The trailer is amazing.
Kaysen, Anya Taylor-Joy is insane. I don't want to say she's on the pathway to equaling or rivaling Florence Pugh, but she could be, because she knocked it out of the park on that chess show, which I can't think of the name of, but I like
The Queen's Gambit.
The Queen's Gambit. That title makes me never want to watch it and take a nap under a warm blanket. Oh, but trust me, if you haven't seen Queen's Gambit, it is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what you call it, like chess with laser beams to make it more exciting.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was fantastic. She was fantastic in it. She looks great in this trailer. Also, it has the girl from Jojo Rabbit, Mackenzie something.
Yes. The Jewish girl.
Fantastic cast. Fantastic trailer because of the song choice, playing the song Downtown, which I love.
Oh my gosh. What they do with that arrangement of the song when it starts getting like really creepy, you know what I mean? Ooh. And then you start getting those weird like violins and stuff, and it's so good. So good, man.
This trailer was awesome. Like, my hype level was just pretty steady because it was Edgar Wright, but this trailer shot it through the roof. It broke through the wall like the Kool-Aid Man. I am all on board. I can't wait to watch this, Kason. It's going to be awesome. That's Last Night in Soho. Comes out October 22nd. If you haven't watched this trailer, watch it immediately. Kason, we got one more.
What is it, Keenan?
As mentioned earlier in the episode, Chloe Zhao is coming back this fall with Eternals. She won Best Director at the Oscars. The first time a Best Director winner is directing a Marvel project. That's the long talked about, long delayed Eternals, a movie that we know, well, now we know more about it, but it was very like shrouded in secrecy for so long. We got the information. We got the first trailer. This drops November 5th. Kason, what's up with Eternals? Is Chloe Zhao bringing the heat?
Man, I mean, I think so. Honestly, from the trailer, it's kind of hard to tell. I thought it looked visually amazing, and honestly, it didn't really do anything to change my hype level one way or the other. I'm still really, really excited about this, but the trailer does not really reveal very much about the movie, so kind of hard to say still, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I thought visually, especially in the beginning, it looked very Nomadlandish, very cool. I was digging the fact they filmed this on location, get rid of the green screens. I mean, you got the money, Marvel. If you're going to have a desert scene, go to the desert.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? And it looks like they did that with this movie. So again, the concept of this movie, that there have been people that have lived on Earth, these titans or these beings, from the dawn of time and have kind of helped humanity, like as they go along in the shadows. We don't know they're there. And now for some reason, they're finally going to reveal themselves to Earth.
Yeah.
And it's like, what is that reason? You know, what's behind all this? Why didn't the Eternals, this group of heroes, help during the Thanos invasion?
Yes.
That's a big mystery. Now, the rumor is these guys are from the planet Titan. Who else is from the planet Titan? That's right, Thanos.
Oh my gosh.
So the rumors are we are going to get a Thanos cameo, maybe even a bigger role than a cameo in this movie. I can't wait. I think that'd be really smart to give some more context and backstory around Thanos. I love that. I'm excited for this movie. Again, we know a little more. We still just don't know enough for me to... I trust Feige, so ultimately I'm on board. But it's like I don't have too strong of feelings either way at this point.
It's going to be awesome. I mean, this movie has a lot of background hype as far as rumors coming out that Feige has been praising the heck out of it. Yes. Behind the scenes.
Yes.
So that's always encouraging. So I think we're in for a good time.
I think we're in for a good time. Kason, that's all we got in the way of movie trailers. Let's move on to what's coming out this week in theaters and on television. We already talked about Loki. That comes out Wednesday, June 9th. We will have thoughts on that for episode 22. Let's talk about some movies. Kason, we got a big one coming out on HBO Max and coming out in theaters. That is the John Chu directed In the Heights. Your boy Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Oh my gosh. Amazing.
Now, this is another musical in the vein of Hamilton. Now, I thought it was weird that Ben Franklin and George Washington were now in present-day Brooklyn dancing around. And what's going on with this, Kason?
Yeah, it's a spiritual successor. No, this is his original musical before Hamilton. This is about a community in Washington Heights, which is somewhere in New York City, apparently. People from New York, you'll know.
It's in the Heights.
Yeah, it's in the Heights. What can I say? And basically it's about this guy named Usnavi, who has a hilarious backstory to his name, which they will reveal in the movie, I'm sure.
Kason, and just do about, you think his name, because it has the word Navi in it, is from Avatar?
Oh my gosh. No, I don't think so. I mean, I hope not anyway. Maybe they'll try and tie that in so the Disney branding is...
They show a flashback, like, how did you get your name? And he's like... I don't tell anyone that story. And then it's him in the theater with 3D glasses on as like a little kid baby watching Avatar.
That would be pretty awesome. No, but honestly, the way that he got his name is really, really clever. And I like it a lot. But yeah, I think it's going to be good. I don't know. I saw a trailer for this the other day before Cruella that was literally just one entire musical number, which is kind of interesting. And it looked cool. It looks like one of those things that's like, you know, I really like the music, but then when you're watching people do it in a movie that's like obviously lip synced, I don't know, man. You know, it's like some people are into it. I think I'm going to be into it. I hope so. Obviously, I love musicals and I love the entire soundtrack of this, but I'm just worried that it's going to cross that threshold to being like cringy. You know what I mean? Like cheesy, too much.
Kason, don't take this the wrong way, but you seem like the type of super nerd mega dork that would be all about this.
Really?
Yeah, I was joking, by the way. I knew you'd take that
the
wrong
way. Well, I know you're joking about the first part, hey, but do you really?
It does surprise me because this seems like right up your alley. Like, I know you love Lin-Manuel Miranda, and I know you like musicals and stuff. I feel like I think it's good you're not that hyped on it because I feel like this has the potential to blow you away, especially given the fact the reviews are through the roof. I think this has like a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes at the moment. We'll find out.
Well, that's what I was saying. Like, I love the soundtrack. I think it's great. I just don't know if when it's actually on screen with all these choreographed numbers and, like, you know, movie editing type stuff, if it's just going to be a little bit more goofy seeming than if I just imagine it listening to the songs, you know?
I hear you.
But we'll see.
We're going to find out. That's In the Heights. That comes out in theaters and HBO Max on Friday. Kason, next up.
You're going to check it out, right?
Yo, 100%. I'm going to try to go to the theater and see this.
Sweet. We can talk about it next week.
Kason, final thing coming out. This is weird. This is a movie made for Paramount Plus streaming service. This drops on Thursday, June 10th. This
Raise your hand if you knew that existed.
This is directed by Antoine Fuqua, who most people would know from Training Day, The Equalizer. This guy's made some great stuff. And it stars our boy, Marky Mark Wahlberg.
What? Marky Mark's in this movie?
No. Kason, that was an amazing Mark Wahlberg impression. I think
that was pretty good.
Mark Wahlberg, you got to be more like, hey, Kason, what's going on? I'm in this new movie with Antoine Fuqua. He's directing my movie.
That's a little better.
Where's the Transformers, yo? Anyway, Kason, this movie's called Infinite. This looked cool to me. I thought this was going to look like a piece of frozen dung, but when I saw the trailer right before we started recording, I was like, okay, this looks well put together, well made. And
This is based on some book.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Intriguing concept. Like, it's almost like the way the trailer started with Chiwi Latel Ejiofor, like, kind of interrogating Wahlberg. Uh-huh. I was like, this is cool. And then I don't know if I really liked it once it became this big, overblown, like, you know, Cars, Fast and Furious style, crashing through doors and stuff, or walls.
Yeah.
But it looked well shot and well made. And I don't know why I was expecting it to have more of like a cheap made-for-TV look.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
What did you think?
I think it looks cool. I agree with you that I think it looks, like, budget-wise better than I was expecting. I'm just very, like, hesitant about getting excited for it just because I had never even heard of it, and it seems like the type of thing that, knowing that it stars Mark Wahlberg, could be terrible. No offense to Mark Wahlberg.
Hey, come on, Kason. I'm a famous actor. You ever see Departed?
Yeah. I mean, I think that was his last good movie, probably.
Wow.
But
you didn't see Transformers 5.
Anyway, I'll check it out. Is this going to be in theaters, or do I have to somehow make an email address for Paramount Plus?
Kason, you got to get that free trial for Paramount Plus and get on that.
Oh, gosh. Okay, I'll add it to my streaming regimen.
Add it to your 9,000 streaming services as you go into debt.
Man, I was trying to watch The Office the other day, and I remembered that it's no longer on Netflix.
Wrecked.
What a bummer.
Hey, I think that is on... Wait, no, that's on Peacock.
Yeah, it's on Peacock.
Peacock, oh, Cheetah, Tiger Plus.
Oh, man.
Zulu Plus. Anyway, Kason, there's too many streaming services. That is all that's coming out this week. We got In the Heights, we got Infinite, and we got Loki. Get on it. Get ready. We'll have our thoughts next week on those things.
Yes, we will.
Kason, let's dive into the mailbag to kind of wrap up the show. The mailbag is one of my favorite parts of the show. I'm going to give you a shot at redemption. How do you write into the show, Kason?
Keenan, there are many options for writing into the show. You can drop a handwritten note right at Keenan's address, which is the following. No,
whoa.
You can write in on Facebook. You can write in on Instagram. You can, that's pretty much it, right? Facebook, Instagram. Send us a message. Put a post. Either way, we'll get your comment on the show.
Those are the only ways. You follow us on social media. You are in the club, just like our boy Matt Bischoff. You know he's in the club. He wants to know, would a three-part movie trilogy reap more interest and financial profit in today's age by being released as one movie every month of the summer? Hey, that's a confusing question, Matt Bischoff, but luckily he clarifies. He says, for example, if A Quiet Place was all filmed at one time, okay, and released as part one on Memorial Day, part two on 4th of July, and part three on Labor Day, would it dominate the news cycle and the box office more effectively than being released years apart?
That is a great question. I actually really like that concept. My initial reaction is that it might be more effective if the franchise is good or if they know that it's going to be a success. I think the problem with this idea is that, for example, like A Quiet Place, they would be, you know, in some real disappointing territory if the first movie comes out and everybody hates it. And then they're like, well, guess what? You're getting two more in the subsequent months. I don't think that would be a good investment of resources. So I feel like the reason this would, you know, wouldn't be a viable option is because they have to test the waters with the first movie.
That's a great answer.
Yeah, but I mean, if you take something that you know is like a guaranteed, like I think a great way to think about this would be Avatar, right? In like the sequels coming out, we assume they're all already filmed and they're just going to be releasing them. Would it be better to just release them boom, 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 or better to do it years apart? I think years apart is a little better just because I feel like it gives people enough time to recharge.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's kind of my initial reaction. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I like the idea, but no, I think in practice it doesn't work. I think you have to give people time to miss something. It makes it more special. And it just, like, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, the reason this doesn't work primarily, though, is because you don't know the quality or how, I guess I don't even want to say quality, but you don't know how something's going to be received. So if you spend the money to film part one, part two, part three, and part one is a fail, then you're in big trouble because you've already committed to two more. Now, the flip side is, though, you are saving money by filming all three at the same time.
Yes, for sure.
So that is true. That's interesting. Okay. But yeah, I
mean, A Quiet Place is an interesting example just because I think given the sequel we just saw, like if you put out another one in 2 months, I think it would be really popular. Because I think that's the type of movie where people are like, I want to see the next one right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the other, I think the flip side though is that you also run the risk of people maybe not being able to see the other parts as quickly. So, like, somebody hasn't seen part two, and then part three is already coming out and getting spoiled. I don't know.
That's very true, actually, because you can give time for more people to get on the bandwagon.
So and it also depends what it is. If it's a trilogy like this, where you're kind of telling a contained story, maybe it makes a little more sense. But for example, imagine, like, John Wick, okay? The John Wick trilogy. And I know that kind of tells a continuous story, but, like, to me...
That would be oversaturation.
Exactly.
It'd be too much.
You just burnt out. It's like, how many more headshots can I see? You know?
Right.
Like, you need that time to kind of wash it away, and then when the new one comes out, be like, hey, I'm ready for the new John Wick.
Yes.
Even, definitely. Like, we talked about The Conjuring. I would not want to see all three Conjuring movies back, like, that quick. It would definitely become, like, just redundant.
Yep, I totally agree.
So, I think we're both in agreement. It's better to wait a couple years.
Yeah, I would say so too.
Great question, Matt Bischoff. Thanks for writing in. Case, the next question comes to us courtesy of our boy Christian Ubius from the Cinema Drip podcast. If you want to dive in and do a deep dive on movies and television, a little more intelligent than this one, I would say, check out the Cinema Drip podcast. Our boy Christian Ubius is killing it over there. He wants to know, Dune drops this October and Avatar 2 drops, hopefully, next December. Which movie has the better shot at starting up a new franchise for a new generation of sci-fi movie lovers?
Wow, that is a great question.
Obviously, we have to mention Dune on the season 2 premiere, Kaysen. You know that's happening.
Yeah, of course. It's our hype movie.
What do you think? Dune versus Avatar 2, which movie has the better shot at starting up a new franchise? It's an interesting question for a generation.
I mean, personally, I think definitely Avatar 2, unfortunately. The reason being, they're already filming three more movies, so we already know we're getting a trilogy. And additionally, that movie is just way more accessible to, like, large audiences, similar to other Disney properties that have blown up, like Star Wars or like Marvel or whatever, you know, kids can go see that and be into it. It's going to be way more of like a family affair. And I just think that that is way more ripe with potential for Disney to just capitalize on it and try and suck out every ounce of profit they can out of it. Dune, on the other hand, I think is going to be way more polarizing. I think it's going to be amazing for people like us, but I, since it had such a gigantic budget and since all this HBO stuff is going down, we're not really too certain of what it looks like to be released yet. I don't know. I mean, I'm still really up in the air on how that one's going to turn out, like box office wise. So that's my thoughts. What do you think?
Yeah, I think if the question was what's going to be better, I think both of these movies, I know there's a lot of hate on Avatar. It's popular to hate this thing and say it sucks. I'm hyped as hell for Avatar 2. I think both of these movies are going to be game changers. Everything we've heard about Dune, people are comparing this to Star Wars and saying like, this is a revolutionary movie that will change the way that people look at sci-fi films and like what they can do and what they can be. And I really hope that's the case. I trust Denis. We've talked about Dune extensively on this podcast. I think we are going to be blown away. But as far as franchise, I think Avatar 2 is obviously the winner for all the reasons you mentioned. Dune, we will be lucky if it gets a sequel. You know, I know they're really hoping for that. I know they're planning that, like, they kind of made this movie with a sequel in mind. Like, we want to wrap up the story in a sequel. I hope that happens. Avatar 2 is obviously going to get all the merchandise, all the Disney hype, all the product placement, all that kind of stuff. Avatar 2 wins hands down. So I think Avatar 2 is better if we're looking at strictly starting a new franchise, we'll say.
Definitely, yeah.
I really think when Avatar 2, when the hype machine starts rolling, I think people are forgetting what James Cameron can do. And I think when they see what he has in store for this movie, they're going to be believers again.
Yep, I totally agree. Dune is rated R, right? Confirmed?
I think so. I don't know. Oh. That's a good question. I think so.
I think that might be a factor, but we'll see.
Maybe, yeah. I hope it is.
Yeah.
Case and final question comes to us from holy crap, our sister.
What?
Yeah, a little nepotism there. Ashley Culler writes into the show. Thank you, Ashley. First time writing in, which is weird. She is our sister. But she has a fantastic question to end the show, Case. And she says, which actor or actress has portrayed the most iconic hero and villain?
Ooh, I like that question a lot.
Basically saying, who has portrayed in their career an iconic hero and an iconic villain both? That's a tough ask.
Yeah, that's really good, though.
Do you want to go first, or do you want me to tackle this first?
I can go first.
Go first, Kason. What do you got?
I think I have a pretty good answer for this. I mean, this is kind of an easy choice, but I feel like Michael B. Jordan is just kind of a really obvious choice because he has played, I would say, incredibly iconic and popular hero and villain roles in Creed and in Black Panther.
Killmonger.
Both incredibly successful movies. I would say Creed, for example, is the follow-up to the Rocky franchise, which is obviously iconic. And however you feel about Creed, whether or not it's, you know, a little bit less popular than the OG Rocky, still, he's the main character, he is the hero, he's the heart of the movie. Amazing performance, and obviously huge success as far as that movie series. And then, of course, Killmonger is the villain in one of the, you know, most notable Marvel movies ever released. And a lot of people would say could be one of the best villains in the entire MCU. So I think that given that, and given that his performance was so critical of a part in making that villain, I think he's a pretty easy choice.
Kason, that's a fantastic choice. That's like a more like new age option, you know? Like you're going more with like the current stuff. I'm going to throw it back a little bit. So here's what I thought. I thought of someone and I thought it doesn't get better than this. And then I thought of someone even better. Okay. I'm going to start off with my second place choice, which was Ian McKellen.
Okay.
Iconic as Gandalf, one of the greatest heroes in cinematic history.
True.
Also iconic as Magneto, one
of the very good choice.
Biggest villains in comic book history. This guy has portrayed two iconic heroes and, or you know, iconic hero, iconic villain. I thought, okay, it doesn't get better than McKellen. Then my brain exploded.
Okay,
Kason, what if I told you? What if I told you I thought of an actor who played the same character as both a hero and a villain, both iconic. Would you believe me?
Oh my gosh, I'm trying to think of who you're talking about.
Kaysen. The answer is Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh,
the iconic role of the Terminator.
Wow.
In the original Terminator, Arnold was the bad guy. Uh-huh. In Terminator 2, Arnold was the hero. Talk about an abrupt, talk about a change, Kaysen. He goes from being a terrifying, unstoppable villain to being an amazingly charismatic, hilarious hero protecting our boy John Connor. What do you think?
Man, dude, I like that answer a lot. I think you're onto something.
Thank you.
That's
I'm the winner, Kaysen. I've got the hero and the villain, stupid.
Those are both really good. I mean, I do like that. The Ian McKellen one, though, I think is pretty fantastic as well.
Kaysen, Arnold was also the kindergarten cop, which was maybe more heroic than the Terminator.
That's true. And he saved his daughter from zombies in that one movie.
I'm a cop, you idiot. I'm saving the zombies.
Amazing.
Kaysen, that's all we got. Well, no, it's not, Kaysen. Don't think we're getting rid of this segment for season two. Kaysen, before we go, before we drift off, before we ride off into the sunset, let's drop our MVPs for the week. Do you have one, Kaysen? I kind of threw this on you out of nowhere.
I do. I mean, I do have one, but I don't want it to be the same as yours, so...
Hey, sometimes, Kaysen, sometimes that happens. There's nothing
sometimes
we can do. I feel like in season one, we both picked Bong Joon-ho like 6 weeks consecutively.
That's true. He deserved it. What can I say?
He deserved it. Kaysen, drop your MVP of the week for the season two premiere, episode 21. What do you got?
This is easy for me this week. I think it's well-deserved. Jim Halpert himself, John Krasinski.
Yes, that is exactly who I was going to pick.
Yeah, man. I mean, he delivered. What can I say? He came out, made a sequel to a movie that never, you know... Basically, I'm so happy with how the first Quiet Place came out, and I feel like the fact that he delivered on a sequel just cements him as an actual Hollywood director that is going to continue making movies. I love it. I think he's a great director. And his movie is top of the box office, man. He's killing it. His wife is in it. And he's saving the movie theaters. So I give all credit to John.
Yeah, Kaysen, great choice. John Krasinski followed up a very tough movie to follow up. A lot of people didn't think a sequel was necessary, and when you follow up something that beloved and that successful, you have to justify its existence. I think he did that and then some. Fantastic movie, and like you said, we got to give him the extra push because he revitalized the theaters, gave it the shot in the arm that it needed, and showed us that the rest of 2021 is going to be all right, all right, all right.
You know it. 100%.
John Krasinski, congratulations. You're the episode. You're the unanimous winner of episode 21's MVP of the week.
Congrats. The Dundee goes to you.
The Dundee for best director. Kaysen, that was the episode. Episode 21. It's real. It's finally here. It happened. Now, barring some kind of disaster with our recording equipment, this is actually going to be released and put out into the wild. It's real.
I think we can do it. We're so close.
I think we did it. Kaysen, closing thoughts before we say goodnight.
I don't think so. I'm really excited to discuss In the Heights next week. So tune in.
I can't wait. Kaysen, we're back to that weekly format. I love it. It's going to be great. We will see you all next week for episode...
I might even reactivate my A-list.
Oh, you have to.
We got to get that back into the conversation.
You got to do it, Kaysen.
All right.
Anyway.
Enjoy your free popcorn.
Kaysen, thank you for coming back for season two. I think we have big things in store, and I will see you next week.
See you next week.
Later.